Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and my mission is to bring you the most interesting entrepreneurs and business people that I can find. And these are people who are really excited to freely share their wisdom, their tips, their actionable advice, and honestly, many times their backstory. How did they get there? How are they with us here today? What is their story? Because I find that absolutely fascinating. So today I welcome to the show David Long. David is a speaker, an author, a successful CEO, and a student of the game of business. I love that. He is also the founder and CEO of My Employees, a 25-year-old firm in the top 1% worldwide in the employee engagement and recognition industry. Now, his firm specializes in helping managers build stronger, more engaging relationships with their team members while linking the rewards and recognition program to the desired goals of the company. My Employees provide employee recognition engagement programs for over 12,000 active client companies in the U.S. and Canada. Now, they've been in business for 25 years, so I think he has a little bit of experience and wisdom to share. And they're, like I said, they're in the top 1% of their industry in the country. Their clients include managers at Walmart, gotta tell you, it's one of my favorite places to go, at nearly 2,000 locations, which is their largest account, Target, FedEx Ground, Outback Steakhouse, Red Lobster, Cracker Barrel, retirement communities, real estate offices, and many other companies. David is also the author of Built to Lead, Seven Management Rewards, R-E-W-A-R-T-S, it's spelled out like that, Principles for Becoming a Top 10% Manager. And I have it on my desk. He sent me a copy to read, and it's an advanced copy. It is a great book, so I want to ask him about that as well. And today he is going to share with us principles from the book, foundational principles that will change your life, not only in your business career, but in your personal life as well. And this is one of my favorite things about David. He believes and lives to his very core what Zig Ziglar said was required to become truly successful in life. And Zig said, you can have, I can't do it in his accent. I would love it if I could, but I can't.
I can't do it.
I have a bit of a southern accent, but I can't pull that one off. But Zig said, you can have anything you want in life if you will first help others get what they want. Go find Zig and listen to him in his voice. It's phenomenal. And as a result, David has touched untold lives through the years, including employees, clients, friends, and family. David, I am so excited to have you here today.
I'm happy to be here, Denise. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, your publishing company sent me your book, and I got to tell you, I'm impressed. And they sent me the plaque.
I didn't ask because you didn't say anything about that. That's good.
I did. And you'll see the plaque. Those of you who are listening live, you'll see it in the scroller, the image scroller on the show. I've got it on my bookcase. It's this wonderful, really beautifully crafted plaque that says Built to Lead. All I have
it
to do is turn my head to the right and I see that.
Built to Lead.
Right. I am right. Right. And right. I'll have to take a picture of my bookcase and send it to you, David. Thank you. I really, really
awesome.
Appreciate that.
Oh, you're by all means welcome.
Sorry?
I said you're by all means welcome. I appreciate that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Well, listen, before we get knee-deep into all the questions I have for you, can you share a little bit about your company and if there's anything I missed, because you've got a fascinating story.
I appreciate that. The company I started 25 years ago, two months ago, back in July, and I started in my mom and dad's garage, and the reason I started in their garage instead of my own is because I didn't have a garage. I'm one of those hard-headed people that hates really stupid rules, and which is a condition, if you want to call that, for most entrepreneurs. They don't like dumb rules. Well, I broke a dough mold and I got canned. And I was very successful when I got canned. They made an example out of me, which is okay. In hindsight, it was the best thing that ever happened to me because I would be in a situation entirely different now if I'd stayed there. But I lost my job, and I went through 7 jobs in 3.5 years. And I'm basically almost unemployable, which is a lot of what a lot of entrepreneurs will say that. Like I said, I don't like dumb rules that irritate me, but I know you have rules for a reason. But sometimes some of them don't make sense. But I started that company in my mom and dad, my company in my mom and dad's garage, and it was hot in that garage too in July. I'll tell you what, in Carolina Beach, North Carolina. And so I was only in there a couple of months before I got a little 9x12 office in a little office park, and I didn't even have a phone. It was so funny because I remember when my clients were calling in, they called my mom and dad's house, and my mom would answer, hello? And they're like, is this, you know, the company's name, my employee? And they say, no. Oh, well, yes. And so mom would take the names. I say, mom, could you say in daytime, could you answer the phone, that, you know, the company's name? She said, no. So it was kind of funny. I didn't even have a phone. It was really tough. I'm definitely one of the American Dream stories for sure. But that's
I love
today
that.
We have, as you said, yeah, today we have, as you said, over around 12,000 active clients in the U.S. and Canada. We actually have one in India and one in Puerto Rico, but they contacted us. The one in India, for example, which that's an unusual story, but the one in India was a second company for a guy who bought our program out of New Jersey, and he liked it so much, he called me up and he said, David, I want to get this program for my other company in India. So I had my guys check on shipping, and shipping, Denise, was twice the price of our program. And I called him back and I said, Ash, I said, A-S-H is his name, Ash, I said, thank Dave. I said, the shipping is twice as much. He says, I don't care. It will more than pay for itself. He said, I want it. Get it to him. I said, all right, whatever you want. So I didn't want him to have a shock when he saw the shipping bill, so I thought I'd better let him know. But, yeah, that's we take care. What we do primarily in talking with the company is our client companies, we do employee engagement surveys where we ask the 10-question survey of the manager and then a 35-question, you know, survey for the employees. And the managers always think they're about 25% better than they actually are. A lot of people think they're awesome, and they're not so much after you ask the employees. It's everybody, including me, I'm sure. But every company, this is usually what the situation is. And we find out where the managers are weak and where the average employee feels like they're not being recognized like they should be. And by the way, there's a statistic from the Gallup organization that says this is universal. They found that 65% of employees surveyed across the country said that they had received no recognition from their manager in the last year, which is really pathetic. I think you'll agree.
I'm surprised it's that low, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I was too, but it is. it's better than it could be. I mean, obviously, but
right.
I should say it's worse than it could be for sure. But yeah, that's how I started the company.
That's a very sad statistic because, let's face it, you know, once people, when they know that they're appreciated, even at a tiny level, just something, give them a spark. It just makes them feel better about themselves. They stand up a bit straighter. They take more pride in what they're doing. How difficult can it be to figure that out? But apparently it's quite difficult.
Obviously, let me tell you a quick story here. My wife and I, we have a motor coach that we have Harley Davidson's, by the way. We rode them cross country, ocean to ocean in 2005. And we have a motor coach because we're a little older. We don't want to be riding cross country anymore. So now we pull the bike behind us and we ride them when we get to a certain area. But we have that motor coach, and we were watching a show the other night on one of the programs on one of the cable channels, and it was renovating old RVs. And we were watching that, and I distinctly remember the manager of the RV renovation place just bragging up and down on this new employee who came to work for him and said how great a job he had done in renovating that RV and that trailer. And the guy, you could just see him beaming. And I remember I turned to my wife and I said, babe, I said, look at that guy's face. That cost that manager nothing to make that look on that guy's face. I said, that's how powerful recognition is. And it truly is.
Well, not only that, but now that employee, whoever this kid was, Now he has pride in his work. He knows that you know, he's recognized for that. And he is going to do everything he can to keep that feeling going in his own heart, his
you
own soul.
He is.
Which means
you
that he's going to
right.
try to be, yeah. I mean, he's already got it in his head now, I bet you, that all I have to do is 1% better than I did the day before, and I will be the best I can be. That's all you need to do. But you need somebody to kind of shake you out of your, you know, oh my gosh, it's a job now. I'm going to go home and kick the dog, you know, type of mentality.
Yeah. That's true.
Wow. Wow. What a shame that people don't understand that just recognizing and verbalizing, you know, that somebody did a really great job for you, it can lift their spirits a great deal.
Let me tell you what we do at the company. Of course, obviously we're talking about my book is the main thing, but let me tell you how we recognize our people. We have roughly, 45 employees. We've got 4 temporary people on to help us through the busy season, which started a couple of days. We have so many businesses that start in January or in February that we can't get them all done in January or February. So we're starting now to renew people to get everything done because we have over 12,000 clients and fully half of them. Roughly half of them start in January, so we had to get started on that. So that primarily, let's see, what was I going to say? Well, strength up. What was I going with that?
You're talking about how your business operates.
Yeah, what was I going to say?
Because we went from gratitude, just showing gratitude, and
I'd say you're
going to show people to teach their employees right from day one.
I wanted to use my own company as an example. I apologize about the blip there in my memory. But actually what we do is we recognize we have four departments, and we recognize one team member. We recognize others, but one specifically for being the top dog that month. And we base all of this on metrics, which this is huge. For your listeners, they need to understand your employee recognition program is not a popularity contest. If it's a popularity contest, it typically lasts 3 months before you get disgusted with it and the employees start bickering and everything else. But when you base who wins on the metrics, on the production that they have, that's how you have a successful employee recognition program. You directly tie what you want to improve in the company to who wins. So we recognize 4 people, and when each manager recognizes their team member in their department, they give specifics. They will say Denise was number 1 in sales, she was number 2 in phone calls, she was number 3 in renewals, she was number 2 in referrals, that kind of thing. So everybody knows why that individual won. There's no disputing the facts. And you have absolutely no dissension when you do that because they know why they won. So that's awesome. So we call the person who won after we say what this individual did last month, then we recognize, we say, Denise is the support employee of the month. Denise, come on up. So she comes up. All of my employees are downstairs in the company lobby. She comes up to the front. I shake her hand, her manager, and all the rest of the other 4 managers shake her hand. And then we stand there, we present her with her plaque. All of the managers get around her, and we take a group picture. And then she's holding her plaque, and we're all smiles. We take the picture. All the other departments, same thing. Each of them come up individually, take a picture with the managers. And I take my management team and the top 4 people from the 4 departments out to one of the nicest restaurants in town so I can wine them and dine them and give them what they call some Dave time. That's me. You know, I speak to them specifically, and we engage in such a deep way while we're there having lunch and talking and having a good time. And when we come back, I have the pictures printed out that we took, and then we physically go out and hand it to them. And you know you've done something right. When you hand them that picture, they always get this big, you know, Cheshire Cat grin on their face when they see that picture. So, I mean, that's powerful. And that Denise, is a memory. And not only that, the photo, and I wish everybody would do this. I've always told people to do it. The vast majority of managers, sad to say, are too stinking lazy to do it, and that's to their detriment, for sure. But if you were to give them a picture, they've got a solid visual that every time they look at it and every time they look at that plaque, they will relive that moment, and they will be re-engaged mentally in being loyal to you and loyal to the company because you showed them significance.
And I love what you said about having the picture there because it's true. I mean, people who are hoarders, you know, one of the things they'll say is, oh, I can't get rid of that. It's got a memory attached to it. And look, you know, I will come across something in my garage or, you know, right now I'm pulling all my Halloween and Thanksgiving stuff out of the attic. Mm-hmm. Every single thing I pull out of those containers, there's a memory attached to it. I haven't thought of it in a year, but there it is. So I think that's very, very powerful.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Wow. Okay, so I have an oddball question here. So how many of the people, you may not even have, you're going to find I have a lot of those. Do you have any statistics on how many of the people who win these awards consistently win them year after year?
Wow. Well, it depends on the company. Our company has been growing at an annual clip of 20% or more every year for 15 years. So we're constantly adding new people. That's not really been a problem. In matter of fact, even if the top person, think about this from a perspective of a successful manager who has a top flight employee, and maybe there's no opportunity for that person to be in management, or maybe they're not really management material. But think about this. It doesn't matter if they're the top person every month. Here's what happens. If you don't recognize them and you start recognizing somebody else, they'll take their top performance and go somewhere else. And
I think that was my question.
I'm sorry?
Right, right. That was my question, but I wasn't articulate enough to spell it out. So that's what I was wondering. You know, if you have, well, it's a two-part question, actually, David. If you have one person that is consistently winning, let's say it's a car dealership or something, do the other people get resentful, or do they try to go into competition? And it, like you said, that you answered the first part of my question that I had not articulated, you have to recognize them. If they're the best, they need to know they're the best.
Yeah, and one of the, and you brought up a good point. One of the things that we tell companies when they say that this person is winning all the time, I said, okay, here's what you need to do, is you need to have what you call an outstanding salesperson of the month, which could take care of anything. In other words, if this particular individual, they didn't win for the best. For example, we can go to real estate. Real estate's a perfect example. It's not uncommon for the top agent to win sales agent, listing agent, and then top producer. If they just do top producer, that person wins all the time. But if they have sales agent and listing agent, and a lot of times it's great to add a rookie agent. In other words, a rookie is going to get recognized, because if a person doesn't get recognized, they're going to go somewhere else anyway. If they don't feel like they could ever win, give them an opportunity to win in their category. Create it. It's very inexpensive, for crying out loud. You're talking maybe $20-$25 a month, you know, for the whole program. I mean, that's to add a person, that's peanuts, especially if you're going to keep a winner who was a new person coming into your company. That's nothing. I mean, how much money do you spend retraining a person that you, or I should say training a person that you hire because you didn't take good care of the one that left? I mean, $25 is a stinking joke. But that's
most
people are too short-sighted on that.
Right, and you don't want to keep training people and bringing people on just to lose them. Because
that's
you just did not appreciate them. It would seem like a no-brainer, but given the statistics that you just quoted, apparently it's not a no-brainer. And I guess my underlying question here is, why don't people do that? I mean, we all have a need to be recognized and appreciated. Why don't we give that to other people?
Is there a psychological
reason for that, or are we just too fast-paced, or are we just downright stupid?
I'm going with the latter part. I think we're stupid. Let me tell you why I think that is. I heard of a company not too long ago that was supposedly getting rid of a lot of tenured people that had been with them for quite a while, and they lost that knowledge base with those people. And they said, well, we'll hire a bunch of new people to come in. The problem is the new people don't know how to take care of the customers like the older people did, the ones that have been there a while. And they knew how to find everything. They knew how to take and answer questions for people. And the new people have no product knowledge to speak of at all, especially if this isn't a major retailer. So what you do is you get people coming in, they get frustrated because you can't help them. They look to you because you work at the company, maybe in a particular department, maybe like home and garden, and you want to know about tractors. But you don't know diddly squat about tractors. You know, what good are you? You know, they go somewhere else and spend money. So did you save money as an employer because you got rid of the qualified, highly knowledgeable team member to put in a rookie because you wanted to save a little bit of money? You didn't sell that tractor. Did you save money? No. you wasted a ton of money. So think, and this is the bottom line, always think long term with everything you do, and you won't have those problems.
And that makes sense. I mean, in the example you just cited, not only did they lose customers, but their customer experience probably just swirled right down the tank.
Absolutely.
Which, of course, drives people out the door. Exactly.
Exactly.
Yep. And the customer service and customer experience are two very, very different things. And I think a lot of companies or businesses don't really understand that either.
Yep, that's right.
I mean, when you walk in the door of, say, you know, a really high-end shop or something, and the person behind the counter or, you know, hanging up clothes or doing whatever she's doing fails to even recognize that you walked in the door.
Yeah.
I don't know
care.
About you. I'm just cranky enough to turn around and walk back out.
It depends on how bad I wanted something at that store. Let's just say that.
That's just right. I mean, shop online. I'll just go to Amazon. Heck with you guys.
Yeah.
But,
I do. That's why I do a lot of Amazon, for sure.
Oh, listen, Amazon, my UPS guy and I are very close friends. He calls me Sunshine, and I call him Mr. Brown, and we get along just fine.
That's good. That's
he's always bringing stuff from Amazon. But listen, and I've been reading your book, and one of your mottos in your book, and thank you, by the way, for sending me that in the plaque. I've got to mention that plaque again. It's so darn cool. But one of your mottos is build yourself, build your team, and together you will be built to lead. Can you kind of break that out for us? I understand what you're saying. I really do, because I lead a large team. But I would love if you could break that out for the audience and elaborate on each part, if you don't mind.
Sure. If you would allow me, what I'll do is, when you were reading the title of my book, you were talking about rewards, you know, all the capital letters.
Mm-hmm.
That's because it's an acronym.
Right.
And if you'll allow me to break down the parts of the acronym, it'll explain everything on that.
That would
be
great.
That's okay. All right.
Yeah.
Rewards. The first R, and this is the principles in my book, obviously, but the first R is for reconnaissance, or in the military they call it recon. And what that is basically is you basically need to know who is it on your team. And Jim Collins wrote the book Good to Great. He talked about who's on your bus. And it's similar to that. I tend to go at a little different angle than he does, but you need to know who's on your team. And by that I mean you need to assess, starting with your managers. If you have a big enough company and you have a management team, you start with the management team and you assess each individual. Are they on board? Are they fighting me at every turn? Are they just gung-ho for everything we want to do as a company and I want to do as a leader? If they're not, then they're detrimental and they're your foundation, so you need to get that correct. If they're not on board, either get them on board or get them out the door. Replace them. And then the secondary part of that is, the E in rewards is education. Let me go back. Continuing on the reconnaissance, you find out who your best people are on your team, your management team, but then once you've got all your managers straight, you actually go back and you go through each employee in that particular manager's department, and you say, how's Bill doing? Is he getting better? No. Why? Okay, well, if he's going to be a problem and he's not on board with us, then let's look to get rid of it. Because we cannot have any people that want to sit down while the rest of us are moving. So we can't have that. Matter of fact, if you go to top10manager.com and you go to resources, you're going to see a poster of Ken Clydesdales pulling one donkey sitting down. And those Clydesdales are your world-class employees, and the donkey is not. Let's just say that. And the world-class companies have a 10-to-1 ratio of engaged to disengaged employees. And then the average U.S. company only has 2 engaged employees for every disengaged employee. Now think about this for a second, Denise. 10 Clydesdales pulling one donkey, not going to phase the Clydesdales. They're going to go on. They're not even going to feel that donkey. But when you have 2 Clydesdales pulling a donkey, eventually those Clydesdales are going to get tired. They're going to get frustrated. Oh, and they're going to leave your company because you tolerated that donkey on your team, period. And that's the way I like to describe that. So you need to determine who your people are on your team and the management level, as well as each member of their teams. 6, and this is what I actually say. I say hire, train, prune, and repeat. So you get good people in, you train them. If they are a keeper, then keep them. If they're not, then get rid of them. And keep going until you get all racehorses. and you're going to have a phenomenal results, and your clients are going to be ecstatic that you have great people taking care of them. So that's the recon. Then we go into education, which is the second one, second principle in the rewards. In education, I have two different things that I talk about, two different aspects of education. The first one is I started years ago, I read a book by Dr. Tony Zeiss, who's a friend of mine and a mentor. He's the president of Central Piedmont Community College in Charlotte, North Carolina, which, by the way, is the largest community college network in the country. So this is a very impressive guy. He's very sharp. Anyway, he wrote a book called The 12 Essential Laws for Becoming Indispensable. I read that book, and I said, holy cow, my employees need to read this. So I bought 11 copies. There were 12 of us at the time. I bought 11. I called a meeting in the break room at our company. I passed them out. I passed out highlighters. I passed out notebooks. And I said, I want you to read chapter one by next week. And next Wednesday, we're going to have pizza, and I'm going to buy you lunch, and we're all going to sit around and talk about what we learned in chapter one. And it was dead silent. Crickets. I mean, deer in the headlights. They're like, what?
I'm sorry.
What the heck are you talking about? We had done this like since third grade, you know, in reading groups. So I said, no, it's not like that. I said, just read the book, come in and talk. And I remember when we had our first meeting, they basically said nothing for the first half, you know. And I said, all right, let me give you some examples of my attitude. And I told them what my attitude was and some of the problems it caused me in my life. And I talked about losing my job and everything. And some of my employees didn't know the story. And I didn't realize that. And they were going, man, I had no idea you went through all that. And they had a new empathy, a new understanding, and a new sync, if you will, with me, a mind sync of, man, I understand where this guy's coming from now, you know, that kind of thing. So we did that. Now the company is so big today that we actually have split the company up, half the employees on Wednesday morning at 10, half of them on Thursday morning at 10. We buy books for everybody, you know, same deal, highlighters, notebooks. They come back in with their summary, and we talk about it. Now, we use that time to bond as a group. We rotate the teams, the two meetings, I should say, every quarter, so you got different people in there. So you get to know everybody very, very well. And as a result of these type of things, we've had so many positive things come out of it. First of all, we've got people going to lunch from people with different departments that never happened before we started the book club years ago. They always hung around their little cliques, not anymore. So it's a lot more of the bonding, if you will, as a team, and it solidifies us as a group. Anyway, so that is something. We also allow people, not just managers, to run the book club, and I travel quite a bit. I'm gone 20 to 22 weeks a year. My wife and I travel quite a bit. And I'm not working in my company at all anymore. I don't do the day-to-day at all. I have people, everybody, they're mini-me's, if you will. They're doing that. So as I built the company, I added little, more and more little mini-me's to take care of what I used to do. So I have a CEO, he's my right arm, Adam Todd. I taught his story's in my book, by the way. But he's a phenomenal, phenomenal young man. He's known me 17 years. And anyway, so the book clubs have just been phenomenal, like I said, in building the team. And we also allow not only the managers to lead the book club, but we started asking for volunteers. And I'm going to tell you a real quick story. Josh, one of the guys, we had four Joshes in the company, but one of them, Josh Straw, was the most shy employee by far that we had. And I remember one of my managers said, Josh says he wants to do book club. I'm going like, Josh? You know, seriously? And he said, yeah. I said, wow, yeah, let him do it. So I remember I was there when he was doing the book club, and Denise, he's standing up there, and the book is visibly shaking in his hands. And he's doing fine. And he just did a great job. And I mean to tell you, I mean, you would not believe the turnaround in that young man. He's come out of his shell. He talks so much easier now. He used to like to stay off by himself. Not anymore. He's just really grown as a person. And you know what? It all goes back to book clubs. I have so many people who come to me. For example, we read Dale Carnegie's book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, probably about 6 months ago to a year. And when we did that, I had no less than two people, and I had other people hint about it, but two specifically said, Dave, that book has saved my marriage. Now, that's awesome, isn't it?
It is. And you know what I'm thinking, too, here? And this goes back a little bit, I want to say this before I lose my train of thought, but when you're rotating these people out and you're taking everybody to lunch and they're from different departments, probably one of the, and you may have intended this, but what is happening now is that these, because they're talking with each other and crossing departments and having conversations, it seems like they're now getting a bigger picture. They're not just isolated
indeed.
In their own little departments.
Yeah, and because of the communication between departments, we started a mastermind group where we take two people from each department and we meet and we hash out any issues between departments. As far as you guys aren't doing this, it's hurting us here, that kind of thing. So, I mean, we have just, it's just blossomed into something huge, and that's why we are a world-class company in the top 1% of our industry. And by the way, you know, part of my title where it says I'm becoming a top 10% manager. That's the last part of my title of my book, the subtitle. I've become a top 10% manager in three separate unrelated industries. So I know what I'm talking about when I wrote that book. And when people read that, I don't care what your industry is. The principles are the same because people are. So that's who you have working in your company is people. So the book principles apply. So, all right. So we got we're talking about education. So, all right, you've got enough about book club. Let's move on to the second part in education. And that is Napoleon Hill's principle, the mastermind principle, which he wrote about in Think and Grow Rich in 1937. And if then, once again, if people go to top10manager.com and they go to resources, if go down, scan down the page, you'll see a picture of Napoleon Hill, black and white picture. Click that link, and you're going to have about 10 different resources about developing mastermind groups. I have six area CEOs of multimillion-dollar companies that I meet with 4 hours one morning every month. And we discuss. You come to the meeting with one of two things. You come with an opportunity of something you're thinking of pursuing, or you come with an issue you're facing, like an employee who's maybe doing something that's hurting the business, but they've been with you a while and you want to see how you can salvage it. So we brainstorm on these things, and it has been phenomenal for all of us. Rob Rickert, one of the guys in our mastermind group, he is a virtual CFO, so he works with companies. Instead of them having to hire a CFO, he has his team for roughly one-third to one-quarter of the price. He is their virtual CFO. And Rob's business in 9 months' time grew by 300% is what he wrote in my book when I asked for his story about the mastermind group. And I know that to be true. I mean, we know because he would tell us, I got this new client, I got this one, I got that one. I mean, he's just growing at a phenomenal rate. And it's because, and he says in my book, in his story about it, he says, it's because of the mastermind group is a large part of my success. Because he realizes he's got like-minded people there. And that's what a mastermind group gets you. All right, and now we go to the next principle in in my rewards principles, in the acronym, is the W. We had R, we had E, and now we're in W. W is winners emerge. And that's where I was telling you about Josh Strahl when he stepped forward. Well, what happens in the book clubs is some people are just naturally leaders. They just step forward. You see them. They handle the communication well. They challenge people. They bring out the best in people. They just show they have leadership abilities. So that's what we find when we have the book club. The winners step forward. So that's the W. The next one is A, and it's attitude. Now, my father, who passed away last year, was a Baptist pastor. And he used to use the example, he said, Dave, if you hold a prism up in front of your face, everything you see through it is clear. But if you hold up a prism or a glass, and it's got dirt on it, and it's cloudy and muddy, everything you see through it is going to be cloudy, dirty, and muddy. So that's what your attitude is. If you have a bad attitude, everything that happens to you in your life, Denise, is going to be perceived as a negative. In other words, if something happened, you say, oh, yeah, great, you're out to get me, or you just did that to make me look bad or whatever. So you're loaded for bear, as they say, and ready to fight somebody's head off at any little thing that happens in your life. That will destroy your career, period. And it'll that's anybody. It doesn't matter who it is. Attitude is foundational to making sure that you have the right attitude or your career is never going to take off. If you're a whiner instead of a winner, whiners get to go somewhere else in our company. We don't tolerate it. So that's
I'm with you. We all have bad days, but for crying out loud, pull your panties up and get to work.
That's right. All right, so attitude, that's the A. The next R, the second R in rewards, is recognition. We talked a little bit about that, so I won't go into great detail. But I told you how we do it at our company. But you have to tie the things you want to improve in your company to your recognition program. If you want more sales, recognize more sales. If you want more people taking leadership roles, recognize people taking leadership roles. If I want more referrals in my company for my salespeople, recognize it. That's how you do it. What gets recognized gets repeated. There is no other, you know, explanation. It's very simple. It's the thing that you focus on is the thing that people pay attention to. Here's a little statistic for you. Just by people in your company know that you're monitoring something. In other words, how many calls did you make yesterday? Okay, you put up a little chart, and it says you made 80 and everybody else made 100. Guess what? It says that. Just by the sheer fact that you're keeping up with that, everybody on that list will do 10% more on average. So if you've got 10 employees and they all kick in 10%, now you have 11 employees compared to what you used to have, but you're only paying 10. That's how powerful recognizing the things you want to improve really is for your company. So that is what recognition is. Now, the next one is the D in rewards, and the D is duplication. And I've developed what I call my Shark's Teeth Leadership Development Program. Now, Shark's Teeth, I'm sure you're familiar with them, but they have rows of teeth.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Denise? Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, if the front tooth gets knocked out, another tooth pops up in its place. And here's how I say it. Here's how I use that as an analogy. Is that with my management team, I ask them every few months, all right, Adam, who's one of my managers, I say, Adam, who is the person that you feel like would be the person to replace you? God forbid, son, that somebody that you were hurt or in the hospital or something like that, or killed, God forbid. Who would that person be? And then you ask all the managers that. They have to be able to tell you who that person is in their department, and better yet, two of them. It's better to have two people, just in case one of those people doesn't pan out or leaves the company or something like that, you got to start up from scratch. So when you find those individuals, then I ask them, what are you doing to develop that person? If you're telling me Tom is your top person, what are you doing with Tom to show him how to move up to the next level? What are you doing? Are you giving him a book? Are you encouraging him to watch DVDs at home? I'm talking about things away from the company, because here's the deal. If somebody really wants to be in leadership, they will do what it takes, and they will do it on their time. That's an indicator of a successful person. They're not a person who sits around, pardon me, and watches Big Brother, Survivor, and junk like that, that does nothing to teach you how to lie, steal and cheat, you know, behind people's backs. That's of no use. But when they read books, they listen to things, they watch DVDs that help them become better, possibly leadership skills and various things like that, then you've got somebody you can build on. So you need to know who those people are. That's how you do your duplication program. And then the last principle is success. And I've been very fortunate in my lifetime and in my career to be, like I said, become a top 10 manager, top 10% manager in three separate industries. In the last two, I have, you know, please don't think I'm bragging when I say this, because the good Lord knows that's not the case. But I have become quite wealthy in those two, the last two that I'm in. And, well, obviously, it's my company is one of them. But the other one is that I have a real estate investment firm. Actually, I have a couple different entities that we have properties in. But I have millions in those. And this is all as a result of my quest for knowledge about many topics. You know, I avoided the property bust, the bubble, property bubble that happened in 2007, 2008. And I was reading, because I constantly read 3 to 4 hours a day, Denise, every day. So I'm always trying to learn things to make myself better. I lead by example in that regard. But all that reading has made me a significant amount of money, because I reinvest what I learn in my people and in my clients. So by doing that, I saw what was coming with the property bubble, the housing bubble, if you will. And I got out, and I called all my friends and family into my office individually, and I said, here's what I'm seeing. I'm getting out. And most of them didn't listen. And a lot of them lost millions of dollars, and I didn't.
Oh, no.
So I thank the good Lord for that. Anyway, so you have, when I say I am successful in the world's eyes because I have money, let me just say that is the least important thing to me now that I have it. And people will say, you know, well, Tia, you got it, so it's not that big a deal. You're already there. Well, let me tell you why that doesn't matter. A couple of years ago at Christmas time, my employees gave me a chest, and it's a picture of it in my book. And I call it my treasure chest. And in it, they gave me what they wrote out what I had meant to their lives as their boss, if you will, their leader. And they wrote it out and they gave that to me, and that was my Christmas present. And I read it. I'm not going to lie to you. I cried several times on reading these things. So some of them were just so heartfelt, you know, that, I mean, it really just touched me. And every time I read them, it hits me hard. But I have a chest, and now I've been adding to that just in the last few years of people who've sent me cards and letters and emails that I've printed out and notes that they've handed me, various things like that. I've stuck in that chest. And when you look at that picture in my book, you can't shut the lid. It's got so many things in there. And Denise, that is success to me. And let me use another example of why I say that. And I'm not the only one who has, you know, by what the world standards have become wealthy in the 1%. And I hate when people call it the evil 1%. It irritates me because, you know, I know everybody that's wealthy that I know gives far more back. You know, my wife and I funded an entire Wounded Warrior documentary, by the way, on Amazon. They have it on sale on Amazon now. It's called Still in the Fight. And that was low six figures that we paid for that thing. And we take no money. Every dime from the sales of Still in the Fight DVD on Amazon are split between four military charities. So I don't want to hear that junk about that they don't give back. That's a bunch of junk. Anyway,
listen, I need to interrupt you a bit. I saw that.
Sure,
I was looking at your website, and I saw that Wounded Warriors is one of the charities that I donate to religiously every year.
Yeah.
And when I saw that you were, you know, supporting the military, I went, okay, this is my kind of guy. I want to talk with him.
Oh, absolutely. They're awesome people. But I think, in my personal opinion, I think the military people should be front of the line of anybody to get any benefits from anything in this country.
Absolutely.
Because they put their lives on the line. Everybody else
absolutely
can get in line behind them. That's my opinion.
Yep.
Anyway.
And
so,
there's too many people who are getting things they have no business getting. The military is being punished for that. So, but that's another talk.
Yeah, it is. That's exactly right. But anyway, going back to success, I want to use this. And this was actually, I saw this on ABC's 2020. And then I read about it in other places. But I remember when you people always talk about, when I get a certain amount of money, I will be successful. I will be happy. Let me tell you what happens when you get a lot of money. I've had two people, Denise, in the last few years call me up crying and say, David, will you buy my house and rent it to me? Now, when I speak to people, I ask them, did you understand what I said? I said, they called me up and said, my house is in foreclosure. Will you buy it before I lose it and rent it to me? Yeah. So, see, most people, if they don't have a lot of money, they don't get those questions. So,
right.
Yeah, that's a bad place to be in. So I wouldn't be in that position if I didn't have the money. So once again, your problems go up with the amount of money that comes to. So don't believe that lie. Now, this is what I wanted to talk about on 2020. Was this guy won the largest lottery at the time. I think it was $294 million is what he actually got the payout. And this guy was actually, that one was actually a millionaire. I think he's in Kentucky or West Virginia or somewhere. And he was a millionaire with 100 employees with his company. The guy was already successful. But what happened was he got all this money he did not earn. And here's what happened. People started contacting him, like I just said. Say, hey, I need money for this. I need money for that. Or, hey, you got all this money. How about giving me $1 million? Or, you know, family members call up and say, you know, I want to redo my house. Can you give me some money? He had so many people asking him for money, Denise, he had to hire a manager to run them off. He didn't answer his own phone anymore. His own family started falling apart. His granddaughter, was the apple of his eye, and he spoiled her rotten. She had a job when he won that money. She quit her job. To make a long story short, he bought her three cars. He gave her so much money, she started hanging around with friends that she shouldn't have been hanging around with. They were taking drugs. Long story short, she died from an overdose, broke his heart. His wife, they started splitting up a little bit, breaking up, you know, having problems. He was going to strip clubs. That didn't help. He was going to strip clubs. And, you know, he was giving away money there, and he started getting in trouble. People started suing him because he had money, and former employees started suing him, all this kind of stuff. He lost the relationship with his daughter, didn't have anything to do with her. And to make a long story short, when he got to the end of this in the interview in 2020, he said, the worst thing that ever happened to me in my life was winning that money. So for all of your listeners who say, my life, I would have no problems if I won the lottery, think again, because it would be a lot worse problems than you think you can imagine. Right now, you probably got friends and family. That man had nothing because he won so much money, and all of those people wanted it.
And there are a lot of horror stories about people that win the lottery. Yeah. You know, they never had that kind of money. They don't know how to deal with it. And most of them, the large percentage of them, lose it. Large sums of money.
Years.
Yeah, which is ridiculous.
Of it. It is.
Yeah.
Because they don't know, and they get the same situation. People call them up asking them for money, and all of a sudden it's gone.
Yeah, they think it's a bottomless
pool.
It's not.
Oh, yeah. So this guy that won the millions, he's not successful, is he? He was. He was successful. He had a happy marriage. His granddaughter loved him. He loved his wife. His family loved him. His friends loved him. He had great relationships with all of them, but the money destroyed him where he had none of those things anymore.
Well, I'm glad you used the word relationships, David, because it looks like he created a different relationship with the found money, so to speak, than he had with the earned
money. Yes. And you know what? Everybody treats it differently. When I stand up before my employees in book club and other speaking engagements, I ask them, how would you think longer about spending $1 million you earned or one that was given to you? Which one would you spend easily? And everybody, oh, the one that somebody gave me. That's right. That's exactly right. And that's the problem, is that we don't think about it. We use it, we flip it, we blow it, we waste it, and then it's gone. So, but when you think
about it.
Well,
there's no sweat equity in it. It's just found money, yeah.
Yep. And you don't have any skin in the game, as the old saying goes. So that's the principles in my book. That's the acronym REWARDS. And, of course, I go in a lot more in-depth in my book, and I talk about it. You know, and that, to me, in the end, is what I ended with, the success chapter. Actually, I ended with a chapter after that. It's called Choose Wisely.
Mm-hmm.
And
chest is in chapter 4, by the way. If anybody wants to read this book, I'm looking at it. It's in chapter 4.
Okay, good. Thank you. And that's important to me.
Told you,
I agreed. Yeah, you did. And actually, I think I said it in the book, that if my house was catching on fire, I would grab my family pictures and my treasure chest, and of course I'd grab my wife in there somewhere too. I'd take her out. But yeah.
Or hand her the chest and you can both go out.
Yeah. All my possessions don't mean as much to me as those things do.
And that makes perfect sense. That's exactly right. And it kind of goes back to when you look at these things and you still tear up a bit, and it takes you back to the moment when you first read them. It's a very emotional, it's a tie back to those moments that were so, so important to you.
Yep.
And, you know, you're feeling their gratitude towards you. And, of course, that makes you want to reciprocate. I mean, that's just the way it works.
Hey, Denise, let me do something for your listeners that I think would be nice. If they go to the Amazon site, you know, Amazon.com, and go and search for Built to Lead, David Long, my book will pop up. If they buy the hardback copy of my book and send me an email at davidlong@top10manager.com, I will send them a free copy of the Kindle version of my book, which is selling for $10 on Amazon, just to help them where they have it if they're stuck at the car wash or, you know, getting oil changed or something. They can read my book on a Kindle app on their phone, you know, on their smartphone. So, I mean, that would be that gets you down. That'd be awesome. I just think I want people to read it. I'm not your typical author. My publisher and I laugh about this. I'm not interested in going across the country and doing book signings and all that kind of junk. No thanks. It's not my life. I have no desire to do it. I don't make my living from the book. I am just doing it to give back where people will learn the principles. And the ultimate statistic is, by the way, and this is from World at Work survey, they said for every 100 employees at the typical U.S. company, only 6 or 7 of those people will ever become a manager. And only one, actually statistically speaking, less than one, but let's just say one, only one person out of those 6 or 7 will ever get promoted again. The other 5 or 6 people that are left usually are gone from the company within 5 years. So there's a massive failure rate in management today. And in my book, and I mean this in all sincerity, if they will take the time to read it, it will fix a lot of their reasons for failure and will keep them in management.
Right. Well, David, one of the big reasons that I hear, and you hear, and thank you for that, by the way, I have a couple of questions about that. Number one, you need to tell people where to reach you, where to send the Amazon receipt, but we'll get to that at the end of the show because I want you to make this offer again at the end of the show.
Okay.
But one thing that I'm constantly hearing, I'm like you, I am unemployable. Have been for years. It was deliberate. I will always.
Yes.
And I mean, that's in syllables, unemployable. it's a whole sentence all by itself. But the thing is, you're always here, oh, well, you know, people do say, well, they didn't appreciate me. But one of the big things is, well, I couldn't make any money there. Well, don't you have to really kind of earn the money that you think you are supposed to get? I mean, is that an unreasonable question?
Yeah, that's right. No, it definitely is. They have to show their value to their employer, or there's no reason to keep them.
Well, that's exactly right. And listen, I have another question because I think this is important, and I'm seeing it in my own industry.
Okay.
Generation X and Generation Y, millennials,
are
they as illiterate as I think they are? I need to know because,
way,
I mean...
That's the first way somebody has asked me that one. That's pretty good.
I get resumes from these people, and honest to goodness, they're using text speak and chat speak. Look, I almost get a headache from rolling. It's astonishing. Two things happen.
Yes.
Number one, I give myself an instant headache from rolling my eyes. The second thing is I deduct IQ points. The third thing, I forgot the third thing, is I delete it. It's like, you dumb idiot. No, I'm not going to chat with you. You're not going to dumb me down. With you.
No, that's exactly right. It's funny you'd say that because I was just on a call the other night with a lady up in New York, and real sweet. And we had I was actually on the call with a lady who was a human resources expert. And, you know, she was talking about how that everybody treats Generation X and millennials and Ys and everybody, you know, differently. And my question was, I said, so what you're saying in essence is that when there's a problem, you have to go to human resources and ask their age before you can fix it.
See, that's ridiculous.
And she said, no. I said, well, then what's this junk? I have employees at my company, you know, that are in their 20s, some in their 30s, some in their 40s, some in their 50s. I treat them all the same. And by the way, to prove that that theory is wrong, the Cicero Group just came out with something where they had ranked as far as percentages the answers from people of all ages, and there were only 2 percentage points different on this, you know, how they need to be motivated. Everybody wants to be shown significance regardless of age. Everybody wants to make them, you know, feel special when they do something right, regardless of age. So I think it's ridiculous to break it up like that. It turns us into an us against them mentality, which we have enough of that in our culture. So I don't think we need to do it in the workplace as well.
Oh, I agree. But what do you do when you've got some kid, I'm just going to call him a kid, who absolutely refuses to use proper English?
I mean,
I'm sorry. I will boot them. I will not tolerate it.
No. We had a beautiful girl years ago. We had a beautiful girl a couple years ago. I mean, just beautiful, stunningly beautiful. And, you know, we didn't really test what we do now. Now we dictate a paragraph or two to them, and we see how they set it up. She sent me an email, and I was like, horrified. I mean, so many misspellings, no punctuation. I was like, what is this gibberish? So I contacted her manager. I'm going, is this a joke? Is this funny? Is she trying to be funny with me or something? What happened here? He said, I don't know what you saw. I sent him the email, and he goes, oh, my goodness. So then he pulled some of the emails she'd sent to clients, and oh my soul, she was sending gibberish to people. And I was like, oh my goodness. I said, we need to start testing for this. We got to let her go. She can't fix this that fast. She cannot do that. Is there anything else we could find for her to do? And we didn't have anything, so we had to let her go. You know, and I felt
Did you tell her why?
She was a sweet employee, but
right.
We basically said, we can't let you communicate the way you do with our clients.
Oh my.
You're dumbing us all down. So, you know,
that's just it. And I don't understand why employers or people like me who work with everybody on my team are contractors.
Yeah.
I don't have employees, so to speak.
Yep.
And listen, if they can't speak the Queen's English, they are not working with me. That's all there is to it. I don't care. And they're not in touch with my clients, but I still have to read their stuff. And if they cannot communicate in a way that I understand and doesn't make my brain hurt, they're not going to be in communication with me, and I'm very, like, I get pretty head up about that. It's like, look, spell properly, use proper capitalization, use a comma, periods. Let's just, you know, come on.
Yeah,
don't make me question your IQ. Just don't do it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's
right.
It makes you look bad when you allow that, so you can't have that.
It does, and unfortunately, I think a lot of people do allow it, and I think that that's a horrible thing to do to your company.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, she's a college graduate.
Oh.
How's that?
I have plenty to say on that, and I'm not going to.
We won't go into that now. Okay.
We will not.
Right.
We will not.
No, we
listen, oh, gosh, that would be a whole, we couldn't even record it, I'm afraid.
No.
Okay, so... You mentioned Napoleon Hill at the top, masterminds. I am a strong believer in masterminds, and I love your book club idea. Love, love, love. I'm going
Thank
to
you.
Actually work that out with my contractors and see if they're interested. Because
Good
look, readers lead, and I'm like you. I read multiple hours a day. I started reading at 3 years old because nobody told me I couldn't. And you know, I love to read. Love, love, love to read. So I'm going to implement some of the things that we're talking about here. But one of the things that you mentioned, I'll keep you posted. But one of the things that you mentioned was Napoleon Hill and his mastermind. Listen, he's one of the very first books I picked up at a garage sale 100 years ago.
Wow.
And it's brown and it's dog-eared. And honestly, the pages are so brittle that you can't fold them down. But it's been the cornerstone of my entrepreneurial library for years. One of the things that fascinated about Napoleon Hill fascinated me was that he had his, he was kind of a metaphysical kind of guy, but he had his mastermind group with Einstein and Socrates, and he was talking to people who were long gone. Yeah, and then of course you mentioned Zig Ziglar's quote, and how did that really? I'm clearly that's a very, very important quote to you. What is the genesis of that in your business? How did that come about?
Well, as I said earlier, I don't work in my company at all today. I don't answer the phone. My job today, and I'm glad you asked this question because it's very important, and this is what every business owner, every manager needs to work on the company all the time, and that's all I do today. My job at the company, and I jokingly say this, but it is true. I am coach, mentor, and cheerleader without the skirt.
Thanks for the visual.
Me to it. I said, there's your business for the day, right there. But, that's what I do. I only build up my team, as Dave Ziegler said. He said this. He said, you build your people, and your people build the company.
Right.
And that's the way I do my business today. That's why we're so successful. You know, I sent an email this morning that I got four or five of 10 people that I sent it to responded to me within about 15 minutes. And I basically just told them how awesome of a job they were doing as a team compared to last year, and how I was so proud of them working together like they were. And, I mean, I got great soft responses. But I probably got some after I get off this interview and open up my laptop and find some more. Because, you know, I'm constantly communicating with my team. I brag on them. In my book, I talk about finding five people a day in your team to brag on. And friends, you can do that as well. Let them know what they mean to you. That's how you build relationships in and outside of your business.
And that is so important. And you can't... And, you know, I don't have the sense that you're just sending out these emails just to send them out. You genuinely mean it. You have looked at these teams.
Oh, yeah.
You know what they're up to. You've done them, you know, looked at the metrics. They are indeed doing better than they were last year. People can tell when you're blowing smoke. So it's not a good idea,
That's
is
right.
it?
It's not genuine.
They know that they're doing a
genuine.
Crummy job. Right,
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's not false bravado. It's genuine praise and recognition.
And that means that they really, really appreciate it. Listen, we are, wow, this hour went fast. Where can our listeners learn? I mean, it really went fast. I'm going to have to get you to come back one day.
All right, okay.
Listen, where can people find you and learn more about you? And if you don't mind, share the Amazon offer again.
Sure. If they go to Amazon.com and do a search for Built to Lead, which is my book, and David Long is my name, and they buy the hardback version of the book, and they email me their Amazon receipt at davidlong@top10manager.com. And 10 is the number 10, not spelled out T-E-N. 10 is correct. Top10manager.com. I will send them two versions, if they'd like, of the Kindle version and the iBooks version that they can read on the go. So I'd be happy to do that. And the whole reason I'm doing that is I want my book read. If they buy it and they put it on a shelf, it's not going to do it. But if they buy it and they have it on their phone, it's with them all the time. That's why I decided to do that.
Right. Well, let me ask you this, because
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. I have one more question for you, but to help people where to find you.
Okay. Yeah. Well, myemployees.com is our company. And like I said, we do 12,000, you know, active clients across the U.S. and Canada. That's what we do. And to get a hold of me, of course, you can just send me an email if you want to at davidlong@top10manager.com. That's how you get me.
Excellent. Well, listen, I wanted to comment on the books because I love what you say about, you know, giving it to people in different formats. I'm one of those people that, like your book right here, I'm reading it. Mm-hmm. It's going to go on my shelf, but I'm also going to get the Kindle version because I like to read on Kindle or my iPad. But I also like to listen. I'm one of those people who can compartmentalize. So I often have books, you know, on audible.com. Right now I'm actually listening to
Audible.
Carnegie.
That's good.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, cool.
And that's my question. I wanted to know if you're going to be recording a version of this book.
You know, it's funny you say that. Nobody's asked me that. You're the first one to ask me that. But yes, I will. And it'll probably be probably 6 months because I'm just so slammed. This is
right.
Our time of year, you know, so I've got my people pulling me left and right now, and I don't get to take off as much this time. I am taking off a week next month. Oh, pardon me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, next month. I'm taking off in a week next month, but, you know, that's just to take my friend out and celebrate his victory as sheriff in the elections.
Oh, well, there you go.
So, yeah.
So he's going to win, I take it.
Yeah, he is.
Good.
That's right.
Well, listen, keep me posted because I like to consume my books in three ways. I like to have the physical book. Now, there's four ways. If the author sends me a book and they have, you know, signed it to Denise with much love in your name,
yeah,
I don't touch that book. That goes on the shelf. That is my autograph, you know, that's autographed by the author. So then I go buy another copy of it so I can annotate it and mark it up and dog-ear it.
Sure.
You really, really read
it.
I'd
like to hear that. Yeah.
Yeah, and then, of course, I buy the Kindle. Right.
Yeah.
And some of the books get so fat because I've got yellow sticky notes and pink sticky notes that I almost can't cover.
There you go.
But then I get the Kindle book, and if it's available, I always go get the audio book. Always.
Yeah.
Brendan Bouchard, I have his book, The Charge.
Oh, Brendan Sharp. I like Brendan, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I read the book, and for some reason it just didn't, and I followed him around for a long time, and for some reason it just didn't quite do it for me. I started listening to it on Audible and went, aha, there it is. There's the passion.
There you go.
So
absolutely. He's
definitely love to hear this.
Out.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. So I would. Once you've got this on Audible or, you know, if it's available on disc, let me know.
Yeah. Okay, absolutely. Yeah,
well, David,
I'll be
around
when I read it, I assure you. I'll be animated.
Oh, I know. I would be with some authors. I'm like, no, I'm not going to listen to you. I'm sorry. But, you know, you really need to have somebody else read that book for you. But most people, when they're reading their own work, they're excited and they're passionate. And
that's
really
right.
What you want to hear. Really.
Absolutely.
Well,
absolutely.
David, thank you. Thank you so much for being with me here today. I have enjoyed it. I've enjoyed your company.
Likewise.
And you gave our audience a glimpse into your life and these wonderful systems and that book. And everybody, I'm telling you, go grab a copy of that book. And I know the audience appreciates you as much as I do. So, and I do want to invite you back. I'll get in touch with you about that. I think we have a lot more to cover here. So anyway, we're going to be careful, though. So we're not going to talk about politics or idiots or anything.
That's right. We were
in
right there. We were.
Sorry. I'm not known for filters. My mother has always told me my whole life. I know. That's why we're getting along so well. But my mother has told me my whole life, honey, your mouth is going to get you in trouble. Your feet can't lead you out of it. It's going to happen.
One day,
I know it is.
I like what somebody said. Your mouth was engaged before your part. Your mouth was active before your brain was engaged.
That's right. I have a broken link there sometimes.
That's good.
That's right. I know.
Absolutely.
Well, listen, everybody, the show will be available for download in about an hour, and you can find us in iTunes. Just type in our names, Denise Griffiths and David Long. Be sure to look for him on Amazon.com. And, David, thank you again.
Loved it, Denise. Had a blast with you. It was fun.
Thank you.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeonthewebcom or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.